This is Eloise interviewing poet, radio broadcaster and Barnsley Poet Laureate for Hear My Voice Project, the one and only Ian McMillan.
Oh, hello.
Thanks for doing the interview, Ian.
Thank you.
How did your writing journey start?
Well, I would think it started when I was very, very young because I've always lived in Darfield and I was born in 1956. And in the 50s, 60s and up to the mid-70s, Darfield was part of a part of Yorkshire called the West Riding that was a separate education authority that had a chief education officer called Sir Alec Clegg, who was a genius, who said that all children are creative. So in my school in Darfield, Low Valley County Primary, we just wrote all the time. So we'd have a lesson, then we'd sing about it, then we'd dance about it, then we'd make some art, then we'd make a sculpture, then we'd write, and then we'd perform what we'd written, and then we'd make a book. So it just felt like the most natural thing in the world. The writing was not something that other people did and you didn't do. Mm. It was just the thing that you did, and it was the most amazing thing. We'd have string quartets that came, we had abstract art on the walls, we'd do a poem every lesson, we'd do a poem, we'd go. It was brilliant. My wife was a West Riding teacher, and she said, you know, you go out, you find a log, you bring the log back, put it on the desk, write about the log, make a book about it, stick it on the wall. That's what she always said, find it, write it, make a book, stick it on the wall. So it just felt, that's when it started, just writing all the time, writing and thinking, well, writing's a natural thing to do. And then the West Riding, again, the West Riding Library in Darfield, that moved from being down Low Valley up to this new library in 1964, all these books that you got for free, that you read. But then this book that I got called Writing for Money, by a fellow called Harvey Day, Writing for Money. And I got this book out, and it was brilliant. And it was like full of, like, wise tales. So it said, so-and-so wrote 800 full-length books, but only got his 801st one accepted. And so-and-so couldn't use his arms or legs, but wrote 3 books with his head. You know, stuff like that. And I kept borrowing it. And it would just say things like, just give you advice on writing. It made you think, like, writing could be a job. Mm. And this fellow, Harvey Day, I would love to make a radio programme about him because he wrote all sorts of things. And I found this list. I found the book in a second-hand bookshop, and he wrote the first book of Curry's, the second book of Curry's, the fourth book of Curry's, and all these other things. But he never wrote the third book of Curry's. And you wonder why. And Mrs. Dove, I borrowed this book so often, she let me keep it. She said, keep it for a bit. So that was it. That's when it began. So when I was about 3, I think, four, when I went to infants at Low Valley, and the first thing I wrote was a story that went, the giant came out of the mouse hole, and a lesser teacher than Mrs. Roach would have said, giants can't come out of mouse holes. And she went, that's great, and she gave me a stare. Because that was the West Riding thing. Mm-hmm. The book to look at is one called The Excitement of Writing by Sir Alec Clegg. And in that he had writing by writers and writing by school kids, and put them next to each other to show that we can all do it. So that's when it started.
Sounds like paradise.
It was paradise, it was. The thing was, it then didn't prepare you for the world. Mm. And then I went to Woth Grammar School, where we had, the teachers weren't West Riding, but we had one fantastic teacher, Mr. Brown, who got me back into writing. But I remember, I often tell this story, that I was so thick, I thought essay was spelled S full stop, A full stop. And I put my essay by Ian McMillan, future Nobel Prize for Literature winner. And he took me on one side and said, Ian, Nobel Prize winners don't come from Darfield. No. Which I disagree with, I think they can. But he was great, Mr. Brown. A lot of us maybe could point to one teacher who really got us going, and he was the one. So yeah, it's something I've always done. Never thought of doing anything else. What else could I do? I'm unemployable.
What were your influences when you first started writing, and what are they now?
When I first started writing properly, there were comics. My mum used to go and get her hair done in Greta Houghton once a fortnight. She'd come back, she'd go to a newsagent called Jack Brooks. It's not there anymore, it's a pizza place in Greta Houghton. And she'd bring me this brown paper parcel, and this is a long time ago, this is the 60s, with comics in. Vino Dandy, Beezer, Victor, and what she called a commando book, which was like little. And I'd read them and I'd think, this is great, this is fantastic. At the same time, I'm getting books out at library. I never saw any difference between them. They were just writing, exciting writing. So I'd write comics. I wrote Epic Comics. That's when I first started writing, Epic Comics. So the comics just influenced me so much. Then when I started reading properly, that's not true, when I started reading novels, my big influence was I read a lot of, as a child, I read a lot of Enid Blyton and Biggles, by Captain W.E. Johns. Biggles was like an airline pilot in the First World War. Then he had a scarf like that. He had three mates, Ginger, Algy and Bertie. And Ginger was meant to be the son of a Durham miner, although he didn't speak like a son of a Durham miner. And then Biggles was in the First World War, the Second World War, the Korean crash. He was in them all. Anyway, so then I read him, and then I started reading John Steinbeck. He was my favourite. The Grapes of Wrath, Of Mice and Men, The Wayward Bus. Amazing books. And in terms of poetry, I didn't read a lot, but then Mr Brown, the aforementioned secondary school teacher, gave me a book by Ted Hughes. He gave me Crow, Ted Hughes' 1970 book. And he went, here's a book of jokes by a comedian. You'll enjoy these. I read them, and they made me laugh. And he said, by the way, they're not jokes, they're poems. I thought, blimey. And then we were doing this book called Nine Modern Poets. So he'd have people like Dylan Thomas, Philip Larkin, John Betjeman, all men, all white men. Amazing. And all these, but the thing, the weird thing was, Nine Modern Poets, photographs on the cover, it never told you who was who. So for years I thought Philip Larkin had got a head of curly hair, he's bald. And I got into Dylan Thomas, which is fatal when you're 15. It's like, and I was writing all this Dylan Thomas influenced stuff. So Dylan Thomas in poetry. But then I went to college and in Stafford and was still reading stuff and standing up and performing it. And in those days there was a network of folk clubs all over the place, with three or four in Barnsley, where they had these singers' nights. They were like open mic nights. And you'd turn up and just do your stuff. And they were great. They were so welcoming. You'd read your stuff, and they'd go, good old lad, clap their hand. Then somebody else would get up and sing their own song. Then somebody would get up and sing a traditional song. And if they forgot it halfway through, nobody cared. It was great. So me and my mate, Martin, he's dead now, but we used to work together, and we'd do comedy and poems, and that's what first got me started into enjoying being a performer. Previous to that, I'd been in a band, but just enjoying just standing up and doing it. So and then these days, my influences, I read such a lot. I read all the time, you know. When I go home tonight, because I went out at 7 o'clock, there'll be two more jiffy bags full of books. It's great. Books just keep arriving. My wife says, why don't we get all these books? It's because I've been presented a show about books on the radio for 16 years, so they're going to keep coming in. But at the moment, what am I reading? My big influence, my favourite, in terms of performance, I remember getting into John Cooper Clarke, Dr. John Cooper Clarke, who was so good, partly because he had a northern accent, which was great. Whenever he sees you, John Cooper Clarke, he knows you vaguely, but he always has a thing to, like, he goes, all right, lad, how's the project? So then you go, yeah, I'm still writing, John, all right, see you. So then he knows, how's the project, lad? So my favourite poet of all time is a fellow called Roy Fisher, who was a poet from Birmingham who died a couple of years ago, and I just loved his work. And one of the first readings I ever did was in 19... like proper readings, not just standing up in open mic. It was in... it'd be 1978 in a pub in Toddington, which is not far out of London. And he was the headliner. Me and my mates were like the kind of support act. I remember it being the weirdest gig, because he said, right, you're going to stand up and do your poems. And Roy Fisher did some of them. Me and my mate did some of them. Roy Fisher did some more. But the organiser was drunk, and he kept standing up, and he was selling vegetables. So you're doing this poem, and he stands up and he's going, get your carrots. And this other bloke was, I'm going to kill that fella for doing that, for interrupting the poets. And this other chap shouts, the drink has destroyed him. It was fantastic. And as a kid, I was a teenager, thinking, God, this is great. This is how the literary life should be. But then the best bit was, like, they calmed this fella down. And then this chap ran in, Jack Trevor Story, who was a novelist, and he's dead now, but he ran in, and he had a cape and a flying helmet and goggles, and he ran around the room shouting, I am the president. And then he ran off, and I thought, this is what you want. This is how it should be. Because that was Roy Fisher. The other thing was, there used to be a magazine called The Urbane Gorilla in Sheffield, years ago, edited by a fellow called Rick Kavanagh and a fellow called Tom Owen. And they used to look really scary. They had Tom Owen, like, fierce. And I saw him at the Ilkley Literature Festival, and I bought this I was looking through this magazine, The Urbane Gorilla, and I was looking through it. It was like, if you don't want to buy it, don't handle the effing merchandise. I went, oh, I'll take out a subscription. And he went, we have readings upstairs at Red Deer on West Street.
Yeah.
I said, right, and it was the most amazing thing, because you go in, and I walked in, and there was a fella reading his gas bill, and his mate improvising on two saxophones at once. Bloody hell, I thought, this is it. So that was influencing the way, you know, standing up in these weird rooms, and that still happens everywhere. Mm-hmm. But Roy Fisher was the one for me, because he just... And John Cooper Clarke in terms of performance. And also the Liverpool poets, Adrian Henry and Brian Patton and Roger McGough. And Roger McGough and Brian Patton are still going. Adrian died. But I saw them there was a Doncaster Literature Festival years ago, and they did a thing at the Brewery Taps in Doncaster. And that was amazing. And I saw Ted Hughes do a reading. Well, he stopped halfway through. He went, I can't do any more. He says, I'm spent. Oh, wow, that's fantastic. So that was it. Just like excitement to seeing these people perform. it still happens now, of course, but they were my influences. But also I'll be influenced by every book I read. Mm. What am I reading at the moment? I'll show you. A bag full of stuff. I'm just reading Louise Gluck. She's one of my favourites. She's great. She's an American poet. So Vicky's going to read that book while we carry on chatting. I'll tell you what, this is my other vice, the New Yorker magazine. Oh, I love it. They have poems, they have stories, they have cartoons.
Have you been in New York?
No, never.
Well,
like
to. That's this time, yeah.
That's
no,
this
I
time.
Listen to their podcasts.
It's good, isn't it? The podcasts are great. Yeah. It's cheaper. I mean, it's expensive if you try and buy it in a shop, but for a subscription, it's only £120 a year, which isn't bad because it comes out every week. It's fantastic.
What draws you the most to poetry?
I think the way that it's democratic and that anybody can do it, and that even if you can't read or write, you can speak it. You know, so I like theatre, I like art, and I like all these things, but to make theatre, you've got to have a space, and you've got to have a plot, usually, you've got to have props, and you've got to have other things. But to make poetry, all you need is a blank sheet of paper, or all you need is your voice. And if you can't speak, all you need is get somebody to help you to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels like a completely universal form that's been going on forever and ever, and whatever happens, it's not going to break. So that's what draws me to it. It's democratic, and it's kind of endless resilience, so that whatever happens, you know, when I first started, I thought it was a kind of precious vase, that if I dropped it, it might shatter, but it's not. It's a thing that will just carry on. And if we fail, it don't matter, actually, because somebody else will come up and do some more, you know, so it's like that, isn't it? That's why I like it, because it's cheap to do, you know. It's not like if we were setting up, if the residency was a kind of opera residency. I mean, I like opera, I write operas, but if it's an opera residency, we'd have to have a lot more behind us, you know. We'd have to have a band, we'd have to have a stage, we'd have to have singers. But if it's poetry, don't need much, do you? So that's what attracts me to it.
You can cut me out of this. I think that's one of the sad things about not... a lot of working class not people not being it for me, for my background, because I feel like it's free, it's easy, it's cheap,
yeah, it is.
It's something you can do.
It is.
And but a lot of people think it's not for me.
Oh, they do. That's always,
you know,
that's the
not
constant
for me
battle.
Of X, Y, and Z, and
it's the constant battle. I know, it's very exciting. And it is, like you say, it's democratic and anybody can do it. And that's the great thing about it. That's what attracts me to it.
Yeah.
And the fact that it'll carry on when I've gone, you know, it's not like something that's gonna fade away and it's gonna get stronger.
Mm-hmm.
I think, especially in these turbulent times, you know, I think a lot of people do turn to poetry at times of either great personal turbulence or like national, international turbulence like we're having now. So, yeah, that's what attracts me to it. These are great questions.
How did the radio work start, and what do you like the most about presenting The Verb?
The radio work started... mate of mine was called Dave Sheesby, and he was a radio producer at Sheffield. And in those days, it's hard to believe that the whole afternoon sequence, the whole afternoon on Radio Sheffield, from 1 till 4, was education. It was plays, it was things for schools, things for adult education. And this guy, Dave Sheesby, rang me up and said, I want to interview you about your writing. So he interviewed me. I made him laugh. He said, can you make me laugh every week? And I always, my advice to people is always say yes. Always say yes. It leads to great adventures. I said, yeah, I'll make you laugh every week. I thought, I've got no idea. Kind of, I don't know. So he said, can you write me a thing every week? It's called Letter from Barnsley. And just a little 15-minute, it's not live, record it. We recorded that. And then and it was on in the afternoons on Radio Sheffield. That's where it started. And then they invited me and my mate Martin to review the papers on Radio Sheffield. That was a live thing. And the first time you do something live, you get very nervous and your voice dries up and you're doing that and you're doing that. But then I enjoyed that. And then Dave Sheesby said, do you want to present a show on Saturday mornings on Radio Sheffield from 9 till 12? Me and my mate. I said, yeah. He'll go, blimey. So then do that. And that was so exciting. Live, you know, just... And I like doing stuff live, because if you say something, it don't matter. If you get it wrong, it don't matter. So then Dave Sheesby moved to Radio 4. And he said, you got any ideas? I said, yeah, I had no idea. So sent me an idea, thought of some ideas. Wrote a thing called The Blackburn Files, which is like a detective story set in Sheffield, set in Barnsley. And then made documentaries. And then, about 16 years ago, they got a new controller at Radio 3. And I love Radio 3, but I always thought it was a kind of an elite thing. And I was in a hotel in Bournemouth. And the boss of Radio 3 rang up. And he went, would you like to do a pilot for a show on Radio 3? And I went, okay. But then I felt like I'm with the big boys here. Scary. So then I did this pilot for this thing. It was originally going to be called Saturday Speakeasy. And then it was going to be called Pure Verb, because that's a line of a Chiamicini poem. So I did a couple of pilots, and then they went, we'd like to present this thing called The Verb. And I went, all right, I will. And it was so exciting. And I've been doing it for 16 years now. And the best thing about it is, there's so many great things about it. On Radio 3, you can stretch out. You can do what you want. You can ask people difficult questions. You can get people to mesh with each other. You you don't have to just say, that's your bit, then your bit's done. Then it's your bit, then your bit's done. And I've got a fantastic group of people, because for 10 years it was down in London, which was great, had fantastic producers. Then they said, Ian, good news, you're moving to Salford. The programme's moving to Salford. And I said, you think the North's a small shed, and Salford is just there, and Barnes is there. And in fact, it takes me 20 minutes longer to get to Salford than it does to get to London. Because you get Barnsley, Sheffield, Sheffield, Manchester, get the tram. Whereas I'd just go to Doncaster, get a train. Anyway, so now I've got these amazing people. My producer, Faith Lawrence, who is a poet, who just a little collection out from Smith Doorstop. Jessica Treen, fantastic knowledge of prose. And just every week is like an absolute joy. So last Saturday we recorded one of the last night of the proms. Before the last night of the proms, obviously. So we had Michael Palin talking about his new book, which is about a ship that got lost on a voyage to the Antarctic. Jason Singh, beatboxer. Anne Dudley, who wrote the music for Full Monty. And a fantastic poet from America called Mojde Stokely, who was a slam champion across in America, and she wrote us an instant poem. But the great thing was, my producer talks to them all and made the whole thing kind of fit together. So every week it's like, so my routine is I write the script on a Saturday, I go meet my producer, she rings us up, we have a chat on a Wednesday, I go across to Salford on a Thursday, we go through the script again and again and again, and she won't let anything drop, you know, she'll keep thinking and thinking and thinking better ways to make this work. And then before the show I always give the guests apples. We have a little apple thing and they have apples. And after the show we have cake. And we try and make it like a party. So it's great. And at the end of it I'm buzzing with ideas and excitement. And we've got a new boss at Radio 3, and you always think they're gonna sack it. Whenever you're the old freelance gonna sack you. And it had to go out to tender, which meant they had to be bid for. But in the end, we got the show for at least another couple of years. So it's great, and it's the most wonderful thing. Except it does mean that every day books keep coming in. Not books that we've asked for, not books that we want to read for the show in particular. So we're doing a special on a novelist called Barbara Kingsolver. She's written loads of books, so we get loads of hers, and that's all right. But I know that people who want to be on the show send books, which is fair enough. So I'm on the list of all these publishers, and they send books, which is great. So The Verb is just the best. It's just so much fun. So much fun, and it seems to be, it's all right for another year, you know. But it's easy, really, because I'm talking to people and at the same time the producer's talking to me down the headphones saying, do that, do this, do that. And once you get used to that, it's not easy to start. Once you get used to it. The only time it went wrong was there's a novelist called Nicholas Royal from Manchester, and there's also an academic called Nicholas Royal from Sussex, and we got the wrong one. And he was down the line, the wrong one, from Brighton. So we were sat in London. And I said, now, and I turned, we're doing a programme about Freudian influence in novels. So I said, I turn now to the novelist Nicholas Royal. And I said, I believe Nicholas, and he's sat in Brighton, I believe, Nicholas, there's a lot of Freud in your novels. And he went, Ian, nobody's ever read my novels. And I said, oh, I think you've been a bit disingenuous because I've read them all. And he went, they're all in my drawer at home. I've never sent them out. They've never been published. And then my producer, who was called Asya Lodi, she went, get out of this one. So then I said, all right, I confess. It was